Access number 27243, Mr. Don Reynolds, Real 8. Now, you were just wanting to make a few points.
Yes, on our boat, we'd got three boats, I suppose, really. We'd got a boat, which was on the starboard side. And on the port side, in a similar position, these are just abaft the main body of the ship, and at the side of the funnel, as it were, on the outboard side of the gangway by the funnel. We've got this motorboat on the starboard side, we've got a whaler on the port side, and we'd also got a skimming dish, as we called them, a small boat that was used for harbour purposes, to take the skipper ashore or to visit other boats, all this type of thing. And it was a very lucky boat, I think, that went through a Russian convoy and still had either its whaler or its motorboat still intact. And we lost our skimming dish and didn't get a replacement for one trip, for sure. But the weather was so atrocious that it used to come in and absolutely clatter these things. And these were the waves that that forced people to jump into safety precautions. And you'd always got to be fully aware. And it's hard to believe that there weren't more people lost overboard. I don't think we ever lost anybody, as far as I know. We seemed to manage it. The only time we lost someone overboard was when we were in dock in Scapa Flow. And that was purely an accident. He wasn't lost, but he was very nearly lost, because in the tremendous weather that was going at the time, we had to put out our boats to go chase after him, because he was being taken away by the tide. And we were fortunate enough to pick him up. But he happened to just fall between the two stanchions, where there was a boat had been alongside, and the Jacob's ladder had been lowered, and he happened to fall through there. But he was fortunate as well, he got saved.
Just a couple more routine questions. What about the latrines, what are the toilets, the heads, what were they like on the ship?
They were quite fairly well appointed, I suppose. There were for our mess deck, on the deck level, full deck level, not the mess deck level, which is one down, on the deck level were three head compartments for the hoi polloi, and one small one for the petty officers and so on who were in the after mess decks. And they were fairly normal, I think. Rather like the type you would see in a supermarket or something these days, with a 12 or 18 inch gap at the top and a 3 inch gap at the bottom, so that they could be properly flushed and washed through and all the rest of it. But no, everything worked pretty.
What about showers? Do you have showers or baths or what?
There was one washroom for the normal seaman type crew, one washroom which had got, I think, I don't know if it was two or three wash basins, and then a shower in the corner. Thinking about it, there might have been four wash basins, but There were times when it was hard to get a decent wash. Certainly, you couldn't get a shower.
Why not? Just no water? Or?
No, there was a shortage of proper water, you know, pure water, drinking water and that type of thing occasionally. We used, of course, to desalinate to a degree. I think there was a certain amount of that went on. But one tried not to wash too much. I can remember going, it seemed, several days with only just washing the face part inside my balaclava helmet. Yes, it wasn't something that you did too much.
Why not? I mean, was it cold or...
Yes.
I mean, was the water cold?
Oh, the water was cold, yes. You never got any hot water. I can't think of hot water particularly. I suppose when you were in harbour, you'd get it at the shower.
What about washing clothes, you know, your uniform?
Well, that used to be done in the mess bucket. Yes, you'd take turns to wash clothes, or do it in the bath space, using the basins. But yes, then when you'd washed the stuff, you had to put it in a drying room, and the drying room was a very small cubby hole, really, on the main deck. It had got as many wooden laths across as possible to hold stuff. But when you were in harbour, you were allowed to put them down in the boiler room where
you said that, yeah.
Yes, I remember saying that. Where we used to be allowed to put them, and they dried pretty quick down there.
Now, what about recreations? You know, when you were at sea and you weren't on duty and you were down on the mess deck, how would you amuse yourself, or would you just sleep?
I don't remember a lot of amusement at all. I suppose you'd yarn if you were of that inclination. You'd perhaps write a letter to post when you got to harbour and this type of thing. But looking through the letters that I sent home, and I have got the letter, most of them, I think, they were most informative, most uninformative, because all of them had to go through the wardroom and get a stamp to say that they'd been approved. And generally, people didn't try to tell any tales about where they were. It was rather difficult, and I never bothered. I think my parents knew after the first trip I'd had where I was pretty well. If we were on the Russian convoys, they expected us to be up there, and so that you simply sort of said, well, we were looking forward to a leave on our next trip home, because we're due for an engine, what do we call it, a boiler clean, and this type of thing.
Now, what about, would they write back? And will it?
Yes, they keep us informed, try and keep us informed about local people. And they'd tell me about various chaps from the factory that I'd worked with, who were sort of one of them in the Air Force, and or two in the Air Force, and a couple in the Army. And particularly if somebody had been home, they'd mention it. And then, yes, it... there wasn't anything very informative coming from either side, I think, really. Purely whether one was in good health or not.
Now, we're sort of moving towards D-Day. So you did these sweeps down with the aircraft carriers towards Norway, and nothing much happened, but you were doing them.
No.
What happened next, then?
Well, the We did get a boiler clean, I think, in Leith, which meant that we got a few days home leave. And then eventually, as D-Day was coming, nobody sort of knew when or where or anything of that sort. But we did a run down the coast, round outside the Irish coast, I think, and came.
Oh, was that a convoy or a sweep?
No, on a bit of a sweep as we were going south. We were obviously on our way to the D-Day preparations, and we holed up then in Portsmouth.
That was in May.
In May.
And what happened next?
Yes, I think the last operation against Tirpitz was in May, and they probably had a bit of a show of strength up there, so the Nazis didn't know that we were all preparing to be down the south. But yes, when we were in Portsmouth, we began to get everything prepared as best we could. All the ammunition and everything else was put aboard, and we did one of the runs that put army ashore on Slapton Sands.
Tell me about that then.
Well, we sort of lay off Slapton, and the troop ships disgorged their chaps into landing craft and so on, and they went up the beach, and we bombarded the houses along the coast road and so on, and generally sort of showed them what a barrage was going to look like. It probably did them more good than it did us. But of course, when we heard later about the disaster at Slapton Sands, it really hit us as to what we'd been spared. The fact that we were there, at least our chaps were guarded when they were doing the job, whereas the Yanks, just a week or two before, had really hit a bad patch. And that I'm not sure what date that would be, but as the 6th approached, we spent most of our time just swinging in the Solent. And in the few days running up to June the 5th and 6th, it was quite obvious by the goings on, the soldiers arriving and filling up the tank craft and the rest of it, that the operation was on. And I had one walk ashore. We always call them run ashore, I don't know why, but I had one walk ashore, and you could see the preparations there, the trees with the tanks underneath them hidden away and all the rest of it. And of course there was no prospect of ringing home or anything of that sort, posting a letter, nothing was allowed. And there we were in Stokes Bay. And just prior to the start of the 5th, there were probably four of the boats there, and General Montgomery, or Field Marshal Montgomery, came aboard.
What do you remember of that?
He gave us a general talk to start off, all four of us, and then he came round. And he walked along. He didn't actually shake all of us by the hand, but he was there. I think he did shake the hand of our leading seaman, who was a fine radar bloke. And he told us all how they depended on us and the rest of it. We've got our lads all keyed up and ready to go, and we're depending on you chaps to put us ashore. And all the rest of it. And such a confident talk. I mean, everybody knew that he knew he was going to put them ashore, and there no doubts about it. And you felt that, well, he was depending on you, and you'd give him your best shot. There's no doubt he was a very clever speaker. Yes, he walked along and sort of was within half a yard of everybody on board, virtually.
And what happened next then?
Well, of course, the invasion was put off by 24 hours, which was a bit of a blow to a lot of people, particularly those who were in close, confined quarters. It meant a lot of alterations, I think, on the catering side and all sorts on the small craft that were going to be involved. But when it came to D-Day, the 6th, well, it was late the night of the 5th we set off, and it's quite obvious that although the weather had been too bad for it on the 5th, on the 6th it was still going to be a hard job for the people who were in the landing craft. But we were committed, and I think looking back over it, everybody agrees that it was the best thing to have done, to have carried on with it, because it to have put it off for a month would have been disaster. So the die was cast, and off we went. And we took, being used to convoys, it was only sort of a very few hours across the channel. But there they were, going dead slow. And we were very, very close. We were in fact escorting one of the headquarters ships, the HMS Largs.
HMS?
Largs, L-A-R-G-S, the Scottish town. They were one of the command ships for the, I think, for Sword Beach. And halfway through, well, we were very nearly there, probably in the light, it was beginning to come up, I think, when all of a sudden the ship's siren blasted, a ship's siren blasted, I'm not sure if it was ours, and we went off quickly, and there'd been an attack, and I'm not sure, I think it was a U-boat attack, but one of our destroyers was sunk, and lost, I think the Svenna, I think was the boat that was lost.
The what, sorry?
Svenna. A Norwegian one, and did a quick reshuffle so that if any U-boat or anything had got us lined up, we were all working at different angles and so on for a wee while. But then came the time for firing off at the shore, and although it seems strange to me, I thought we were among the first people to fire.
Your little ship?
Well, yes, all the people with us, because we'd got battleships and all with us as well. But I'd thought we were early on in the action, but I think that further along the coast, although I hadn't heard it, there had been action earlier than we were involved. But we'd known, of course, that the parachutists and the paratroops had been going overhead. We'd heard them go over from sort of midnight and this sort of thing.
Now, what was the shore bombardment like? And did your ship join in, or did your gun join in?
Oh, we did join in. Yes, I can't remember again whether we all went off at the same time. If we sort of turned parallel to the shore, we could all four of us have shot at the same time, but we were putting a bit of a barrage down on the coast.
Do you know which beach?
I think it was Sword.
It was Sword, do you think?
The left-hand beach, as you might say. And
can you see the effect of your fire?
Difficult to say, because there were so many people firing. If it hit the target, it was ours, but if it didn't, then somebody else was having a bit of a do, and they weren't on the right stuff for the day. But I understood from one of the books I've read since that we bombarded Lyon-sur-Mer. Now, I've never actually looked it up on the map, but I would imagine it's one of those on the edges, very edges of the coast, just on the shore adjacent to Caen, and the objectives just there.
Was there any return fire of any kind, or?
I can't remember any at that time. No, I can't remember any. We seemed really to have it fairly soft. It was later on, you know, days after, that I can remember the fire coming from the shore.
Now, what happened next then? So the shore bombardment's going on. What happens next?
Well, we could see the people coming, the landing craft and so on coming.
Was it impressive? I mean, can you sort of paint a picture for us?
The pictures that show on the television, there are one or two chaps who have entered the water there on the French coast so many times that we ought really to know the chap's name. But they were going in there, and the landing craft were piling up, and some of them were managing to turn round and be towed off again or go off again. And there was quite a bit of traffic in and out. And we were keeping a close watch on what was going on, doing the odd bombardment and keeping an eye open, of course, for aircraft and everything else. I can't remember very much of German air activity, but there was some. And they did cause quite a bit of damage in different places, but I can't recall actually being part of that.
That's okay. So what's next? What do you what's the next thing you remember? Saw the landing craft going in.
Yes, well, those chaps were fighting the good fight down there. And then, later on in the day, began to come the air reinforcements, the gliders. And we'd get the message on the guns, sort of look out for so many aircraft towing gliders. And the gliders came in, and we watched them and saw them zoom down and land in the fields and so on. And those of us who were able, who got binoculars or were able to watch through binoculars or even without binoculars, could see the gliders coming down and settling in the fields, and the planes going off, turning back and going off. And it's a job to keep a track of time, because I'm surprised to learn that we were over there for perhaps 4 or 5 weeks. And it meant we simply sat there, or perhaps at night. I can remember us on a time or two being detailed to go a little bit further along the coast to stand guard over an American battleship. They like their chaps to be able to sleep well and so on, and they thought, well, it better for us to take the night turn. So we went up there to see that the no E-boats or anything came in to disturb them. And
did you have any trouble with E-boats or submarines during that period?
We didn't. I don't remember us having any.
Did you see it as a threat, either of those things?
I think they were a threat. We fired off regularly, and one time particularly, we came back to Portsmouth and arrived in there about 9 o'clock at night, and we were to do a thorough restock of the cordite and everything else for the guns. We'd very nearly shot everything off.
But what at?
Well, just at sure yeah. targets. Some of them fairly well inland, I suppose, being conned by some of the artillery spotters and the rest of it. But we had fired off quite a few rounds here, there and everywhere. And we got to Portsmouth, pulled in alongside the jetty, and the ammunition and so on came down to be loaded on board, and there we were staggering up and down the gangways, taking a shell and shot, and we were worn out. We'd been on the other side of the channel firing off and the rest of it. We were worn out, and the dockyard mateys were supposed to be helping us to get this stuff on board so that we could get back to sea again, and they weren't having any. They wanted extra time for reloading the ships, and I think they had a bit of a strike on. So they had to send to Portsmouth Dockyard and rouse a few of the poor old seamen and bring them down to help us out. There was so much we'd got to get on board in such a short time, as it were, and so we've got a rather poor opinion of some of the dockyard folk.
So you were off there for, you were going backwards and forwards, were you, to Portsmouth, or what were you doing?
Yes, Portsmouth, I think we probably did that a couple of times. At this time we were, and it particularly on that trip perhaps, I remember seeing strange things. And of course we'd already seen the arrival of the at Arromanche of the harbour, the caissons of
the Mulberry
Harbour. They arrived and we saw all those go into use.
What did that look like?
Well, it's simply a floating jetty. Concrete jetty.
Was it an impressive looking thing at the time?
I think it was. We were very pleased and very surprised to see it. To see, lorry loads of stuff being brought straight off the boats and carried along and ashore, rather than having to been put onto small landing craft and ferried to the shore and the rest of it. It must have been quite a help on the catering side and on the ammunition and everything else. And certainly it did allow people, casualties and so on, to be transferred to the boats, to get transferred straight back to the Blighty.